Hello.
How are you?
I'm warm.
Aren't you always? I mean, have you really like ever been like icy cold in that office?
In the wintertime, yeah. Yeah. When I get up early-ish and work, I usually like put a sweatshirt on, some sweatpants. It's a little chilly in here.
For somebody who lives in Arizona, you have a lot of sweatpants.
I have, no. I only have a couple pairs of sweatpants.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not talk about laundry habits.
I already don't want to know. So
how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking. I am just sitting here in this lovely environment of absolutely the same spot I'm always in. And I have a delightful little, Kona Brewing Company, Big Wave Golden Ale. So
I was wondering if you were going to start bringing the funny beverages back to the show.
It's not funny. It's totally normal beverage.
Is it? Is it another goofy flavored beer?
No, it's not flavored. It's beer flavored. Do you like beer flavored beer?
Sure, some of them. We've talked about it. I don't drink a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking water now. Water's tasty.
Okay, this is really exciting.
No, we're live for the second time, and I think we're struggling to deal with it. Last time we had the distraction of a guest, so we didn't really pay attention to the fact that like people were actually listening to us talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall we discuss the movie then? I don't have anything else to add right now since
we don't have any follow up. Normally we do follow up.
What follow up do we have? I mean, it was great having Andre on the show, and we got a lot of good feedback that people really enjoyed the episode. So you know that was great. Thank you very much. We are doing our second ever live broadcast after that emergency quiet soft launch thing. So that's about it.
Does anyone do hard launches anymore? They're all soft launches these days.
No,
aren't they?
they're all soft flaccid launches.
yeah, we should bring that up. We apparently coined another food related phrase that is worthy of a parody Twitter account, which is nice.
Yes, we have the soft flaccid waffle Twitter account, who's not either Dan nor myself, tweeting at us and faving things and retweeting things every now and then. In addition to our usual Shame Burrito account that is also following us and faving things, we don't know why that one's there either. So as long as we don't cross the streams and we don't get a soft flaccid burrito waffle, then we should be fine.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Burritos are kind of soft and flaccid inherently, so I think that would just kind of be redundant.
No, well, a well-constructed burrito should be kind of like turgid, you know? Like,
I don't think I've ever heard anyone refer to a burrito as turgid.
Well, I mean, you don't want it to be like super soft because then it's going to flop apart. Like, you want it to hold together. It needs to have some structural integrity, Dan.
And this is the problem with the bean and cheese burrito. I love the bean and cheese burrito, but it almost never has an appropriate structural integrity.
No, but it has its own self-sealing cement in a way, where it is made of goo that will hold itself together.
The people who do it well do it where they make the tortilla just crispy enough where it sort of solidifies it a little bit, but it doesn't get cracky and sort of like immediately spring a leak. But the ones that are kind of like Chipotle-esque with their stretchy tortillas who fill it with beans and cheese, that's just a disaster waiting to happen.
Okay.
You're not a fan of the bean and cheese burrito?
I'm not, because bean and cheese burrito always evokes the freezer bean and cheese burritos in my mind. So I never really seek them out, because by the time you're outside of your house and at a restaurant, why not have something with actual protein and food and stuff inside of it? So I typically don't go for that. Although I did have cheese enchiladas last night from Pinche's Tacos in Culver City.
Hmm. I'll pretend I know what that is, and I'll say that sounds delicious.
It's okay. And it had refried beans and rice on the side, and it was covered with the red sauce. I prefer green sauce, but it was
you
not
prefer a green sauce, really?
Yeah.
They're all so cilantro-y.
No, well, I like the ones that are like really tomatillo-y. Those ones.
How many E's was that?
I don't know. I'm not sure how to use that for a descriptive term, but you know what I mean. Just that really sharp acid bite from that It's nice to have. It's okay. Nothing really to write home about. It was a fine series of enchiladas filled with cheese.
It's going to be the series of books that you write as a memoir.
A fine series of enchiladas.
Yes.
Volume one.
Now, see, I'm a fan of a bean and cheese burrito with sour cream and rice on the inside. It's actually quite enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Although I did have another awful, shameful Sofritas Chipotle burrito. Was it yesterday? It was yesterday.
That's the fake meat burrito, right?
Yeah, it kind of just looks like seasoned couscous or something. I don't know what they actually put in their sofritas there.
Is it wheat gluten or is it tofu?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, that's always, kind of just, that's always a really
pale,
good sign.
You want to know? It's pale yellow color.
Yeah, that's... I'm not particularly enthralled by eating at Chipotle to begin with.
No.
No, and as we've discussed, that is the origin of the shame burrito, because you really should never be eating there. It's not like an amazing, wonderful burrito experience. It's just convenient, and you can also get better tasting things that are also convenient. Rye in the chat, since we have an actual chat and stuff, pasted a Chipotle infographic about where sofritas come from. So
I don't know that I want to look at this.
Yeah, it's tofu and the soybeans and how they do the different kinds, and then it's firm, and then they stir it in the thing, and then it goes in stuff, and it's in the thing.
And see, as he rightly pointed out in the chat room, there is they are incredibly dry, and I got sort of like the luck of the draw that his scoop kind of like all sort of stuck together. So I got like extra sofritas in the burrito. And for a minute, I was excited. And maybe if it was like steak or chicken or something, I would have actually been excited to get like, oh, look, I got a larger helping of the main ingredient in my burrito. But being that the main ingredient was the sofritas and it was incredibly dry and kind of weird tasting, I was not super thrilled at the burrito that I ate.
Now, you said that you got a sofritas burrito again. So I want to ask, since this was your experience this time, was it not also your experience previously?
When the sofritas are in an appropriate balance, i.e. they don't like skimp on the sour cream and the cheese and the hot sauce, everything works out pretty well. It's not so bad.
Okay, so it just needs to be well lubricated is what you're saying.
Yes, they do need to compensate for the dryness of the sofritas with hot sauce. And of course, I enjoy the sour cream and cheese mix as well.
Yeah, a well-lubricated turgid burrito. So,
you're just going for all sorts of inappropriate food-related titles these days, aren't you?
I can't help it, because I know that there's someone right now who's going to type exclamation mark S and then the thing I just said. So it's...
You're just going to hang on, just going to wait for that 15 or 20 second delay or whatever it is, and then just wait for it to pop up. Oh, there it is! There it is in the chat.
Yes. It was worth it, Dan, wasn't it? Isn't this an amazing live experience? I hope that the people who tune into this later on their podcast apps that have tuners for some reason will enjoy this.
Technology is a magical thing. We say some stupid things into a microphone in our part of the world, and then somewhere around the other part of the world, that signal lands in somebody else's ears, and then they type that into a little text box.
Yes. Yes.
The magic of technology. This is the promise of technology. This is what Thomas Edison envisioned back in 1732 when he invented the computer.
Okay. So, do we have any other food? I don't know where to go. Do we have any other food-related news, or would you like to go on to something else that people would consume, which might be, a movie of some sort with things in it? Okay, so...
I think we've wasted sufficient time, and I think we've got a lot to talk about with today's film. Can we call it a film? Call it a movie? Popcorn movie?
I'm not one of those people who gets all nitpicky about, like, film versus movie and, like, art versus not art and commercial, da 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 da, whatever. I think most of the people who get that worked up over it are a little pretentious. So we will talk about our popcorn movie film right now, which is Jupiter Ascending, which
yeah.
is... it's like a planet, but it's also somebody's name. And ascending means up, which is like into space.
Or up the class chain, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that too.
This movie came out earlier this year, and it's already on the rentals. I saw it on an airplane coming home from Italy when I was not an Italian tourist a couple weeks ago. And it was, you know, in my, like, half-awake stupor because it was an incredibly long flight. I thought it was a ridiculous, terrible movie. And I've got a slightly more refined opinion of it now, but I still think it's kind of a goofy, not super great movie. But there are some interesting themes in it that probably have a lot to do with the fact that I was leaving Italy and, you know, sort of the historical aspects of this giant empire that we were sort of touring around and looking at the ashes of. That sort of was still fresh in my mind when I saw this, when the idea of this sort of galaxy-wide empire of planets that are harvested and, oh, sorry, spoiler everyone. But there are some interesting themes in there that I kind of enjoy in this film, but I think somebody else should make a movie about it and not watch this movie.
Yeah. So I have heard nothing but negative things since before this movie premiered. like most of America and most of the world, I would venture. It was not critically well received, and not well received, but also like maligned. Like, people came down hard on this thing. They were angry that this was made.
Is this based on a book? Is that where some of that hatred came from?
No.
No. Oh, okay. So this is a brand new property, huh?
Yes. Well, that was one of the things, is that they supposedly got the idea to do this while they were finishing up working on Cloud Atlas. And they were doing some new IP, as they say, for Warner Brothers. And this had a very long, protracted development process, which included a lot of reshoots. It took forever. It was delayed, I think, what was it, like a year? Or was it delayed 10 months or something? It was close to a year delayed from its original release date. It's not a good thing when that happens. That generally means something did not go well.
I mean, there is just a ton of post work in this movie too, so I'm sure that contributed to a part of it.
Oh, I don't doubt that, but given all of the problems with everything that's going on in here, and the fact that there's a lot that doesn't make a ton of sense if you really like start picking at it for like anything close to the surface level, then yeah.
There are things cut out. I don't know. There's one instance where you can really tell that something is cut out, but I kind of get the sneaking suspicion that there's a lot more cut out of this film too, which for 2 hours and 7 or 8 minutes or whatever it is, not great. I kind of feel like they probably like rolled up to the studio with like a 2-hour, 45-minute cut of this movie, and they just said, "What are you doing? Nobody is going to watch this."
No, it's actually kind of a long feeling. to sit through, like there are 2-hour movies where you can sit there, like Independence Day, you can sit there and you're like, there's stuff happening wall to wall, you're paying attention. It doesn't necessarily feel like it you know, really like drags on the floor. This drags, and it's weird because it drags in very strange parts of the film. Like when something theoretically should be interesting, like a battle sequence, and then it's
yeah,
like,
that's the one I was going to point out too. I was curious if you had the same opinion of where it was dragging. It's just like, well, now we're going to sit through a 12-minute battle scene, and then at the end of it, essentially nothing about the plot is going to be changed.
Yes, I didn't like any of the battles in this film, not because they looked bad, but because there wasn't anything consequential really happening. It just took forever. And then they would basically get to the end of the battle and, like, almost nothing really happened. Just like you're saying, like, nothing of consequence. And
especially in the first battle where they're like, all that stuff that just happened, immediately erased and fixed. The city is back to normal and nobody is going to know because they'll erase everyone's memories. So it's like, cool. So just did that for funsies, I guess. You could have just, like, instead of trying to fight back, just, like, fled and you would have been fine.
Well, I mean, he needed to shoot them down so that they could flee, because otherwise they would just keep following them.
I guess.
Yeah, but I have other problems with that scene. and the scene after that when he's discussing what happened. So should we go through this in a logical progression now that we've established that basically it's a mess and that I think it's sort of like a good, bad movie and that it's sort of like a fascinating failure and that it still sort of holds some interest for that. So I wouldn't dismiss watching it as harshly as I think some other critics have, but I think that it has like some egregious faults in it. And I would like to discuss every single one of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure we should step through it like beat by beat, but I definitely want to go through it chronologically and hear what you think worked and what you think was the failure, because I have different opinions and I think we're probably going to be almost polar opposite on these opinions. But we start out with some delightful voiceover from Mila, whose name is Jupiter, and she basically has a fun misleading line talking about how she's technically an alien. It's like, ooh, this is a space movie. We know that. But what she actually means is she's an illegal alien, because we find out shortly thereafter that she was born on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic because, I mean, there's a little bit of the romantic backstory about how her goofy star telescope loving dad met her mom. And then they were about to have a baby and this giant mob of leather jacket wearing guys in Russia just kicked their door down, stole their money, and killed the dad for I don't know what reason. Like that. This is like the very beginning. We're setting up the plot. This whole idea that her dad was in love with astronomy and just was ruthlessly murdered, and mom had to flee and all that. So and this is like basically never discussed again.
It's horrible. They should have seriously just cut out everything about this beginning. I understand wanting to set up the fact that she does not come from a place of privilege, that she had to flee, her family had to flee under these circumstances, and that she's at a disadvantage, and that she doesn't get to know her father, and that he was interested in space. But his interest in space is not clearly established or seemingly makes any sense, and it doesn't really relate to anyone in the family. It only comes up in her desire to have money in order so she can buy an expensive gold telescope.
He's just a dingus with a telescope who likes looking at space, and he particularly likes Jupiter because it's quote, the planet. It's the biggest one, so that's why it's the best, and he just spends all his time staring through a telescope for, I guess, just because, like, the way people look at, like, nicely made cars or something? I don't know.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And I really thought that this didn't do the movie any favors, because you're basically establishing some long, meandering, totally separate thing about the family that has nothing really to do with the overall movie, other than, like I said, setting up a couple little facts about reasons why characters feel like they need to do things later in the film. But I don't feel like the justification is worth it for having like what is essentially a bunch of dead air at the start of the film, because that when the mobsters come in, there's nothing dramatic about it. you're asking yourself, why did this happen, and why would we care?
Like, who are these people? Why did they target this family? Why did they assume that they had a bunch of money? Is this just a thing that there's just like roving packs of mobsters in Russia that kick your door down and steal all your stuff and then shoot you and run away? Like, there's no context. But this whole idea of like trying to establish the closeness of the family, and especially with the mom, and we see that they've fallen upon hard times, but there's still, you know, the importance of family, all of that stuff that bookends this movie is really just there for that one scene towards the end of the movie. And I'm slightly jumping ahead and we'll come back to it, I'm sure, but spoiler alert, where she's, you know, she has to do her, God, I hate it that this is the phrase that comes to mind, but it was on the Flophouse, you know, needs of the many, versus trying to save her family, just doing what's right for the, you know, the earth. And she has to have that moment where she'd do anything for her family because they're so important to her, but she has to think on a larger scale momentarily and do what's right for the entire planet. And just this long setup at the beginning, and of course the play out, you know, a couple parts throughout the movie where we've got this creepy thing going on with her cousin where he's trying to get her to sell her eggs for money. Like, all of that stuff is just there for that one scene with Eddie Redmayne where they're talking about, you know, protect my family and I'll give you the earth. And it's just if the scene where she was actually like conflicted and, you know, thinking about saving her family versus saving the earth, if that scene was actually well done and there was emotion to it, maybe it would have been a payoff, but it's definitely not.
No, there's no payoff. It like I said, it sets up reasons for why characters explain why they need to do things, but it's like, as an audience member, you're not attached to the family ever under any circumstances.
And I gotta say, I'm glad I've seen this a second time, because there is a lot of characters explaining what is happening. And the first time through, I just watched it and I go, I don't know what person's name or family you just said there, but I assume this is going to be important because it seems like an important thing to you. But having seen it a second time, like all of that dialogue is relevant. It's not just sort of like superfluous filler about random space families and power struggles. It's actually relevant to the story. It's just you have no idea what's going on unless you've actually seen the movie first.
Yes, because they're and I believe you're talking mostly about the complicated politics of the siblings that we'll get to, because that is so convoluted. But at first,
but it am I wrong that that's the interesting part of this movie? Is that what you find interesting about this too, or no?
I find that interesting, but I have problems with the execution in the film. Like, if it was a whole movie about the complicated space politics, that would be interesting. I also found
we're kind of doing it a disservice calling it space politics. It's really just sort of like that old world struggle for power and killing anyone for any purpose, just strictly for your own personal gain. And just the way that plays out with these selfish, incredibly powerful people is kind of fascinating. And just, again, this whole empire of planets sort of being like farms for human beings is, I think, a fascinating topic that is really sort of underplayed.
It is not a fascinating topic.
Well, not literally the part about farming people, but this idea, if you were to try and extrapolate, like, what would like an old world like empire of, you know, different classes look like if it was actually something that lasted all the way through into, you know, a billion years or whatever the hell they said it was in this movie.
Yeah, well, it has serious flaws though, because it doesn't, and this is why I say it's sort of politics, because there is a political component external to the family, where there's commerce and where there's seemingly space police. How the power relationship is set up between any of these things, because like we don't know if there's like a space president or anything. Like it doesn't make a lot of sense, and like who has jurisdiction over what, and like things you can do to police that seem totally like you wouldn't want to actually do that to real police, but you're totally doing it to the space police. So there's a lot of stuff in here where it's just like it's very convoluted. Like the so while it is interesting for the power struggle between the family, where it's like, you know, space Game of Thrones and like the cheating and the backstabbing, it's relatively singular in that the cheating and the backstabbing is explored in these sort of singular events that are spaced throughout the film, where it's we introduce the siblings, and then after that, it's one-on-one struggles between Jupiter meeting each of the siblings one at a time, and then moving on, and we don't revisit the siblings, which I think is a flaw in the construction of the film. I was reading some of the backstory, and apparently, like, the Wachowskis wanted it to be like the Odyssey, where you just, you know, keep moving through and exploring new destinations, but instead it felt like nothing of consequence happened each time that she went through a different, like, family member. Like, it was totally separate stuff. Like, when we get introduced to the family and they're like talking over the dehydrated bodies of whatever planet that was, and Eddie Redmayne cube materializes or hologramizes or whatever happened.
Which is something they never use again in the movie.
No, and then I was the whole entire time this scene was playing out, it was like, so did he like beam in, or is this just a hologram that doesn't have like any flickery quality or something. Like, it doesn't really matter, but it's just like one of those things where you're, if it is transportation, then you're wondering like, why don't they use that again? But if it's just a hologram, then you're like, okay, well, I can see why they wouldn't use that again. But then why do they leave like people to talk to other people instead of just like sending holograms places? Anyway, it doesn't make any, they have this meeting, and it just establishes that they reap all of these people on the planet into some sort of chemical process, and it's supposed to be painless or whatever. And they own different planets, and there was one planet that their mother owned, and the mother is dead, and it's Earth. And Eddie Redmayne's all like huffy about it, and Cube materializes away. And we don't really know what to make of this from the initial outset. Like, is Kalik a good person? Is Titus a good person? Is Eddie Redmayne's character, that I don't remember the name of, is he a good person? Of course, the answer is none of the above, but the we slowly explore each one of them, and then it doesn't really come back to bite us at any other point. Like, once she goes and visits Kalik, then that's over. It's done. Yeah. And once she goes to visit Titus, then that's over, and it's done. And then once she goes to visit Eddie Redmayne, then that's over, and, well, it's the end of the movie. But the progression of that, where just one at a time, and then it doesn't link back up to like be anything about the power struggle. Like, it's not like the siblings versus each other at any point through that, where they're using sort of like manipulative tactics of like, oh, I'll get the bounty hunter to do this for me, and then I'll get this person to grab this thing. But they're not, they don't ever like come to a point where they're fighting each other or anything. Which I was somewhat disappointed
about.
No, apparently
they do battle in the stock market, like with Q2 results, just, you know, talking about you'll eclipse your nearest competitor and all that crap. Apparently that's how they actually do battle in between the family. They don't actually physically battle. They'll kill all kinds of other people, just they don't come near each other, really, except in holograms.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. So anyway.
But this idea of this sort of like Odyssey-esque journey that she goes on, I sort of get that with like the singular stop at different places, but I don't see that at all. Like, what is her journey? Where is she coming from and where is she going to? Like, she doesn't really have a journey. She's just kind of taken places and then keeps saying, I want to go home. And the other way that this is in no way like the Odyssey is that she doesn't really like learn anything in each of these instances. Even in her very last stop with Eddie Redmayne, she's incredibly gullible and dumb and just like has like a hint of forethought to realize what's going to happen if she actually puts her forearm against the tablet or whatever.
Okay. Now we're getting to a different issue, which is the character of Jupiter Jones, who who does not have a lot of agency. Now I've seen
or personality.
No, or personality, or and, you know, I like Mila Kunis fine, but there are certain kinds of things that she's not as good at articulating on the screen in terms of acting. And I think when it gets to the crazy wackadoodle space stuff or the wacky fantasy stuff like in Wizard of Oz, I don't think that she necessarily is really like at the top of her game for those. Because I think that she works a lot better when she is sort of a more down to earth person, literally down to earth. When she's, yes, when she's cleaning toilets and stuff, and she's, you know, chit chatting with her theoretical boss about what clothes she should wear, which was a weird scene. Cause it was just like, that's just somebody in their underwear for a really long time, but okay, whatever. And like they have, She's doing much better in those scenes than she's doing really when we get to like the space wedding and when we get to the like all the other stuff. It's just like talking with Eddie Redmayne, and it's just like like you're saying, she's just so gullible and naive, and she has to be like, oh, what should I do? Like, I can't do this and I can't do that, and oh, but then won't you harvest the earth? And it's just like, oh God. Come on. Yeah. And I know that's mostly how the character's written, where it's just like she's not written to like really take charge and be a badass at any point.
No, I mean, she's not prepared in her life in any way to be in this position. And that's understandable for her to be kind of a bit of a follower, especially, you know, when they're going through all of the bureaucracy stuff and like, you know, we're going to help you reclaim your title. She's just like, cool, I guess that's a thing I want. And I get that to a certain extent where she is wholly unprepared for any of the events that are about to transpire. But, you know, having a little bit of just like an imagination of like, imagine for a moment these things that we're saying and the fact that you are sort of royalty and in charge of this planet now. You're a part of this thing that's larger than you. Like, can you think for a moment like what you might potentially do rather than just do literally everything everyone else around you is saying?
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yes. So let's just also talk about Channing Tatum's introduction to the film. Because he is
ominous.
Yeah, well, except that, you know, he's a good guy, so it didn't feel ominous, and it kind of dragged for a little bit because it's like, oh, he's breaking into a thing and there's other guys, and it's like, oh, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? And it's like, obviously Channing Tatum's the good guy, I saw the movie poster, so you know, move it along.
And I heard stories about a whatever the hell they called him, spacejacker, that was so good finding anybody, it's gotta be him. Like,
yeah, what was it, Lycope or Lycamp or whatever?
I don't know. Like, they called him all sorts of silly names.
Yeah, like they introduced this concept of like people who are spliced with animals, because in space they're all humans mainly, and then they have in some cases humans that are spliced with the DNA from other creatures in order to make them more capable at whatever task or caste that they're introduced to. And
that's totally a potentially reasonable idea for this world that is sort of based on genetics and sort of youth and modifying their genes to stay young and all that sort of stuff. Like that idea I thought was interesting, at least.
Yeah, except they don't really explore it, except for the fact that he's got pointy ears and yellow pubes on his face. So it's
thick eyebrows.
Oh, God. It just looks so bad. And the sideburns. And I don't – it's one of those things where it's like he's really supposed to be taken very seriously. And then you're looking at these close-ups of his face when he's trying to deliver these lines. And you're like, I am staring at yellow chin pubes right now. What is happening? Like, did you guys not see this on set? Like, this is not gold. Like, this is yellow. This does not work. This is not like a, this is not a, like an amazing thing where we're just like, oh man, what an amazing engineered human. It's like, no, he's got Spock ears and yellow chin pubes, and this is what we got. And I can't take him seriously. And
Sean Bean, he's got a very keen sense of smell, as noted by the fact that when he breaks into the little clinic there, he sniffs her signature, which with the close-up on the nostrils flaring, we understand that he has smelling senses beyond what a human would.
Yes. Which, whatever.
Doesn't really come into play. It comes into play one other time where he smells something else. Oh, no. That's the big winged lizard guy who comes in and sniffs the mother and goes, you're the mother. So apparently they all sort of have like enhanced sense of smell.
Yeah. There are a couple other spliced creatures in the film, like Sean Bean, who plays Stinger, who is apparently part bee. Why he's called, I'm not making this up. This is what it is in the film.
I didn't think he was part bee. I thought it was because the person who made his genes was a fan of bees or something?
I'm looking at Wikipedia. Sean Bean as Stinger Apini, which also Apini, not a great name. A Han Solo type character, in quotes. Stinger is
it does not say that.
Yes. A Han Solo type character. Stinger is half human and half honeybee, which gives him wings, speed, special vision, and a sense of loyalty. He is a former comrade of Kane's, but lives on Earth with his daughter. And I would just like to point out, after reading that little part of Wikipedia, that in no way did his spliced abilities come across on screen. No, he just seemed like a space human who had his wings that he got from the Corps or whatever.
I thought it was like a Captain America style thing where the wings are like the gun. They give you a gun or whatever. That's like part of your uniform or whatever, especially at the end there when Channing Tatum's got his wings. Was he spliced with a wolf, dog, and a bee? Like, why did he have wings too? He's not a bee.
No, but see, that is what I also got from it, is I thought the wings were just additive when I was watching the film. Like, they would just have somebody, and they'd be like, okay, you know, you graduated pilot school, here are your wings. Except, you know, it's okay, you graduated – space cop school. Here are your literal wings. But they don't really clear that up. So I don't know. Maybe he had honeybee wings at some point, which would have looked ridiculous. But
I thought I did see somebody who had kind of, wasn't it the big ear chick who like briefly has like Tinkerbell wings?
No, she just has big ears.
Somebody in that whole like floating orgy scene or whatever had Tinkerbell wings. I swear I saw some Tinkerbell wings.
Could have happened. And the, you know, and then there's, the little rat spliced guy who works for, the bad guys. And, it's like, okay, so he's spliced with a rat for what reason exactly? Cause it doesn't make any sense.
Crafty?
Yes. Yes. No, it's because he just needs to look evil. And so we have all of this nonsense going on where they have all this world building that if you start to like watch the film and you're starting to pay attention to the world building and you're just like, wait a minute, is this in the movie because they thought it was important to the movie, or is this in the movie because they thought they were building a universe that was really cool? And most of the time, I think they thought they were building a universe that was really cool, and it really didn't help the story. I think that is one of the big flaws in this film, is that you could probably tell a bunch of amazing short stories off of this, or a bunch of movies or television shows or comic books, whatever you wanted to do, graphic novels, everything, video games. You could do a whole thing because there's so much stuff you could set up and pick apart, and it wouldn't even matter. You could tell all kinds of stuff happening with like commerce and space pirates and whatever you want to have, like just all this stuff. But when you try to condense this down into a 2-hour movie, you're just like, what? Huh? Like, just like, what? Do I need to absorb this information for a reason later? Like, no. Okay, because it's sort of like, you know, with you know, Chekhov, you put a gun on the mantle in the first act, and then in the third act, it goes off. But with this movie, it's just like you just keep putting guns there, and nothing goes off. Like there's just a stack of guns, and you're just like, okay, so what am I looking at all these guns for? And so that's a lot of what I feel like this movie's doing. It's just like it just keeps dropping more guns, and you're just like, this is a lot of guns. Like what's happening?
This movie is just one really large mantle.
Yes.
I totally get that. I mean, and the other thing, like, that they kind of hint at, they don't hint at, they directly say it is, you know, little earthling, you don't understand. Like, this is part of a larger endeavor. You know, this whole industry is gigantic beyond your wildest imagination. And we never see the larger industry. We never see any other royal families. So is it literally just these three people in the entire universe? I don't think so. And maybe they do want to try and like keep this in a large world, but try and make the story a little bit smaller. But it's just, it's like half Star Wars, half The Odyssey, and it's not working in either of those directions. So I don't know what to make of this movie. All I can say is this idea of this sort of like giant empire that spans the universe is something that is a fascinating topic to me. But in this movie, it is just really not explored. And that's why, you know, I think I even said that when I wrote in my little five word review on the little plot app, that I really thought this was based on a book, because it really feels like 40 chapters of a story that is condensed down into a 2-hour movie. And I guess maybe they were thinking to reverse that and sort of start with this and then go there. But, yeah, this should not be a movie. This should be a book or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, to sort of go on that for a moment, when I was watching the film, a lot of the stuff they were introducing visually, I was like, oh, you know, like all the Baroque stuff. It was just like, oh, this kind of reminds me of, a sci-fi novel series by Ian M. Banks called The Culture series. Like, it was just a series of books that he did for like 20 years before he died, where there was this expansive, you know, huge human culture that spanned everything. And there was genetic modification, there were enhancements, there were these big Baroque ships, and there was like there was a whole story that was like about a culture that lived inside of a shell world dome around a star, and like how they were transplanted off of some other planet. And so they were like in like early 1900s Earth development industrial age. And so like they were interacting with the big actual like space creatures and stuff, and like all that stuff. And it was just like, this is sort of along those lines. And as I was watching it and I was thinking more about those books, I was like, I kind of wish they had done those books because they at least had plots. Whereas with this one, I feel like the plot is there, but just like not interesting, and that it is all about the things that are hung off of it, and that they don't gel together, and then we just get a total mess by the end of it. But they are sort of fascinating to see in their messiness. Like every time we see a spaceship just jump out of, you know, hyperspace or whatever, and it just hangs there in space and it's just like going into the vortex on Jupiter or like whatever. It's just like, this is kind of neat. Like I could watch this, but it doesn't really like mean anything in the film. Like it, okay. They're like neat ship guys. Yeah, nice gold statues. There's a lot of that
cool space shots going through like Saturn-esque rings or whatever, going through the storms and Jupiter and all that stuff. It's just like, cool, we're gonna watch this now, or we're gonna see like this giant sort of space kind of colony that's built on top of a planet, which is something, I guess. I did feel like, you know, part of this idea that they're trying to communicate the scale of this world, you know, especially in the end there, the little factory, the people factory or whatever, it's just, I don't believe that world would have been so like dark and menacing. Like I understand that a lot of it is just, it's built on industry, so it's not going to be like opulent palaces or whatever. But this is also kind of like this mix of the world and the ships where the royalty live. And it's just still that sort of like dark metal ugliness of the spaceship. And there wasn't enough of a mix for it for me. Like the wedding hall I thought was interesting in terms of just like trying to mix again the sort of like, old-fashioned architecture and the sort of opulent royal palace look to it. But that was really the only instance that wasn't that sort of like just like a dark metal spaceship.
Yeah, well, they tried to set up a distinct style for each of the siblings and also for the non-family stuff of the colony, of the bureaucracy, and how that has sort of a cobbled together appearance. And then the space cops kind of have like a, I don't know, Robotech Macross kind of thing going on, or Gundam, and because you know the Wakasis are heavily influenced by Japanese anime, but the stuff with the siblings, it's like a little on the nose because it's like Kalik stuff. It's just all about, you know, beauty and like sort of a spa like experience, and then Titus's stuff is all about his egomania and his fixation on himself in a very strange like his orgy room, his cathedral that he has for himself. And like, you know, when she's at the wedding and she's like, who are all these people, and he's just like, oh, you know, you just need to have them around. It's just like, so he has a bunch of people on his ship just to show up and like applaud him getting married.
They're Sims. They're just there for part of the experience, which is important because that's literally how Channing Tatum finds them. He goes, there's a lot of sim activity over there. That's probably where they are. Like, really? Did you literally just say that? Are you kidding me?
Oh, I didn't realize they were Sims.
That's what he said. They're just Sims. They're like, this is matters of state or whatever. But then, like, when they break through the Warhammers, which are, I don't know, small explosive blocks of things that sort of flock.
That cracked me up because when they were going to go, we're skipping all over this movie. I just give up. We're not talking about it in any sort of linear order. It doesn't matter though, because it's just like shit happens, guys. And so the when you know he gets Sean Bean back and it's like, okay, well, do you feel bad about the thing you did? Oh, it's for your sick daughter. Okay, fine. Let's go into battle.
So much betrayal and backstabbing and like, well, I was hired to take you to this person, but you're royalty, so we're going to take you to this person. But on our way to that, you got captured and we're taking you here, but we really meant to take you there all along. But oh, the police are going to take you there instead. And then you're going to, it's like, what the hell are you talking about? I get that everyone should have like a motivation that's not necessarily apparent on their sleeve the whole time. Like they can just sort of be in it for their themselves or trying to use all of this stuff to their own personal gain. But like literally every person does like the exact opposite of what they said they were going to do.
Yeah. And well, which makes the betrayal all the less surprising when it happens.
Especially right down at the end there where Eddie Redmayne is, you know, doing his little hand-to-hand combat with Mealy and he goes, you're just like my mom. I know you won't pull that trigger. And guess what? She pulls the trigger, especially, I mean, yeah. Like, oh my God. First of all, you're poking the bear, you're poking the gun-toting bear, which is a bad idea. And second of all, like, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, the dialogue is so bad and so cheesy. And it's one of those things where it can be funny to sort of make fun, to poke fun while you're watching it. But if you're trying to watch this for the very first time, then it's like not as entertaining. It's just sort of confusing whenever they're talking about nonsense and backstabbing each other and explaining why they backstabbed each other. And it's like, I just don't care. But the, like the Warhammer
thing. Don't forget explaining your plan to the good guy right before you try and kill them. But oh, you didn't kill them. So now they know your plan. Like, come on. Haven't you seen a James Bond movie? You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Well, there was... Okay. You're referring, of course, to Titus. And that was stupid because Titus was an idiot. And the whole entire film, it's like setting up like some big reveal that Titus is actually going to be this duplicitous person who says that he wants to do this one thing, and he secretly wants to like get all of his mom's stuff, basically, including the Earth and like harvest it and everything.
By the way, the way he's going to get his mom's stuff is by marrying his mom's reincarnation. But sure, we'll move past that.
Yeah. They're all just super creepy. And so like with the Titus thing. It just irked me so much, because when you're thinking about that for 5 seconds, you're just like, okay, so he's supposed to be this really intelligent person who had this great master plan, and this is going to be a stroke of genius, and he has it all tied up, all the loose ends tied up, and it's like, you could have just totally let Channing Tatum live and be fine through this whole thing, and then Mila Kunis would have suspected a thing, and then you could have killed both of them after you got married.
If he would have kept him locked up in the dungeon that he had him in instead of throwing him out the airlock, yeah, he would have gotten married just fine.
No, not even that. But if he had just like let him roam around the ship and just be like a totally normal person, there wouldn't be any, like, it's not like he's hiding like ships or anything or like drugs. Like, there was nothing that he was hiding. It was just his plan was all about just marrying her and then killing her. He didn't even need to tell anyone on the ship that. So there wouldn't have been anything for him to like sniff out or ferret out or anything. But instead, he captures him, puts him in a cell, threatens him, and then at that point, you kind of can't just like give him back to Mila Kunis and then expect her to still be like, I totally want to marry you. And you also can't really like dump him out an airlock, because then she's going to ask where he is, which she does. She asks, and he's just like, it never occurred to him. And he like makes up some lie on the spot. And it's like, Titus, you moron. Like, the directors and writers, who are the same people, spent all this time setting up like this big reveal and this twist, and he's going to marry and kill her, and then it's like, what? And 2 seconds later, he's just like the bumbling, like complete moron that is like completely failed at every possible step in anticipating anything that could possibly happen in his plans. And of course, you know, with spacing. Channing Tatum, and he's like, oh well, nobody will follow me now or catch me or anything, and he doesn't realize that it was this really resourceful bounty hunter he hired who totally whooped the butt of all the other bounty hunters. Maybe he'd do something with all the emergency packs that were inside of the airlock when you knocked him out. And
even at the end of this, he gives up so easily. He's like, oh, followed my plan. No big deal. We'll go about our business. Another day, another reincarnated mother that I accidentally almost kind of didn't marry.
Yeah, and he's just like, oh, my bad.
But he's a moron from the first time we see him. Like, okay, so ostensibly the idea is that I wish they would have given Eddie Redmayne's character a name that was, like, understandable on screen, because I'm looking at it now and it's Balum, but I could never understand what anyone was saying. But so basically he's been looking for his mom's reincarnation for a long time. Maybe it's just like a running thing he has, and that's why the other hunters or whatever are sort of looking around at the clinic or whatever. But Titus hires a better hunter in Channing Tatum to find him, and he totally gives away the fact that he is also on the search when he very first meets his brother there in the hologram world on the one where they just harvested everyone. He's the one who brings up Earth. Like, if he never brought that up, Eddie Redmayne would have never been suspicious that he also knew that the reoccurrence was a thing. And so basically from the very beginning, he put his foot in his mouth and kind of ruined his whole plan. So he's just a giant moron.
Yeah, I don't care for him. And again, we don't see him after the big dramatic, you know, like, oh no, got to get there and get her before the wedding happens. And I must say that I was really disappointed in what they chose to do with Mila Kunis' character through this part here, because Jupiter Jones, after meeting him for like 5 minutes, he has a little conversation with her where he's just like, oh, don't you know where this stuff comes from? And everybody in the audience simultaneously says, yes, we all know where this came from. And then Jupiter Jones is like, no, I don't know where this could possibly come from. And it's just like, Jupiter,
they try to explain it to her like three other times. They get cut off right before they get to the part where they say, oh, by the way, it's people.
Yeah, well, no, but she herself should have inferred what the stuff was when, you know, the conversation with Kalik. And it's just like, oh, you know, all of these people, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, Jupiter, it's people. Like,
you see
Soylent Green
planet.
Is people. Come on.
You seeded our planet, but she never thinks to go like, wait a minute, what's all over our planet they might have seeded us with, and it's full of genetics that make people younger? Like,
well, it's not caraway seeds, I'll give you that. But
she's a little slow on the uptake, that's for sure.
No, and so they do this whole thing, and it just drives me nuts, because she has this conversation with him where he's like, oh, and I just want to continue what my mother really wanted, which was to avert herself from all of this stuff. And it's like, okay, so you're just saying these things. Like, there's just, like, what would Jupiter have to go off of here? Like, other than the fact that you're just saying that she was killed because she wanted to, she regretted this stuff. Like, big deal. Like,
she's
the action
so gullible.
She took?
The yeah. only thing that like convinces her is like when they're having that conversation where, by the way, she goes like, I want to talk to Channing Tatum because I don't know if you're saying is true or not. And he goes, still don't trust me. It's like, no, she met you like an hour ago. Of course she doesn't trust you, but you yeah. trust the guy I hired. And he's like, he hands her like Channing Tatum's freedom papers or whatever. And he goes like, I could use this against you. Like, A, how? B, you had Channing Tatum arrested. Why should she trust you that you're now giving her like the little thing that lets him back in the army? Like, what that? And his whole plan was predicated on the fact that giving her that would make her feel guilty about her suspicions and go like, all right, I guess you're an okay guy. I'll marry you.
Well, you're also forgetting C, which is that why would any of this be motivation to marry him as fast as possible? Because like
sleep on for a night, think about it.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Like, immediately it's just like, well, here's your wedding dress, let's go. And it's just like, whoa.
You know, he's like, I think, you know, I think you're about to be murdered too, or I'm about to be murdered. I think he said like, I'm about to be murdered because I'm carrying out my mom's work. Like, I guess that was the rush. Like, I'm pretty sure they're gonna kill me tomorrow, so we totally got to get married this afternoon. Like, did he really suspect that his death was so imminent that he had to get married immediately? I didn't get that at all. There was no urgency there at all.
Oh, no. Like, she's just like, okay, guess I gotta marry you then. And then the ceremony occurs. And the whole entire time she's dumbstruck by what's happening. And she's on the floating pad going down. And she's like, oh, this is so crazy. And like all the flower petals are coming off her. Like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to look at. But then she gets down there and it's just like, okay, well, let's just have our ceremony for the wedding, which is surprisingly similar to Earth weddings, but whatever. And
you say a sentence and then you put your hand on a thing and you get a tattoo ring, which haven't they learned anything from watching Earthlings? Like, a tattoo wedding ring is a terrible idea.
No, well, something tells me they probably have the technology to do stuff with that, since they put tattoos
to remove their glowing gold tattoo ring or whatever.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe they need to go see Terry Gilliam again and get that taken off. But so they do this whole nonsense thing here, where it's just like, okay, so you've abducted me. You sent away the person that the only person I knew and liked who's guiding me to safety the whole entire movie. And you are basically threatening me to get married as fast as possible. Okay, I'll put my hand on this book now. And then it's just like, oh, there was a noise. And it's just like, oh, just sigh, just keep your hand on the book. And it's just like,
yeah,
oh,
like he even
so
shoves
dumb.
Her hand back down. Like, at that point, she didn't realize what was happening.
Yeah. And her reaction to this is basically like she was just shot up with like some sort of anesthesia, because it doesn't make any sense. And it's so silly, because then, you know, this is after the space battle, which goes on for forever, and is just, it doesn't make any sense. It just has all the geometry blocks, just this big abstract thing, and you keep cutting back and forth to Sean Bean and Channing Tatum and these little like gyroscope hand things, and it's just like, okay, I can't connect to any of this. I don't feel like there's anyone who's actually in any sort of jeopardy because you're only showing me these people with these little wrist-turning things and then, like, giant clouds of robots. And so the thing happens, and he breaks in through the ship, and then he, like, uses his gravity boots to, like, surf down to where she's at and, like, pull her away. And it's just like, okay, this is ridiculous. And then they just leave. And it's not like, okay, well, what you were doing, super not legal. Like, what exactly are the space cops enforcing here? Because obviously they have the authority to come in and take her away. But then they don't have the authority to arrest Titus for...
Well, he was tricking her into marrying him, but he wasn't doing anything necessarily illegal, I don't think.
Well, holding her hand to that book to force her to get married is illegal. And also firing on the space cops, that can't be legal, I'm pretty sure. But they're just like,
well,
okay.
He's a rich guy. He'll probably just get a fine or something. Like, oops, we hit the Warhammer button instead of the tractor beam button. It's our bad. It won't happen again.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. God, it's just one of those eye rolling things where it's just like, and then we move on and we never see Titus again. So we've never seen Kalik again after her last scene, and we never saw Titus again after his last scene. And it's just like, well, what are you guys doing? Like
I still don't know why they took her to Kalik. Like that Sean Bean or whatever stabbed Channing Tatum in the back, not literally, and took her to Kalik instead of to Titus or
no,
wherever
no,
they were going before.
No, that wasn't Sean Bean, remember? That was the two bounty hunters.
Oh, right. It was the bounty hunter. So they took her there, but I still didn't understand for what purpose. Like, well, what was Kalik's plan to get her on her side? She was just sort of like, hello, here's some exposition and a statue that looks like you.
Yeah, see, this is another thing, is like, with Kalik, I'm not entirely sure she's necessarily a villain. I don't know that she's necessarily a nice person. Which I would assume not, since she just bathes in dead people all the time.
I mean, but, you don't get to 14,004 years old without, you know, being a little duplicitous.
Yeah, well, and so, but what she ends up doing, like, necessarily to the characters that are here in the film is relatively mild. She abducts Jupiter Jones, but it's more or less to safety. She is holding her captive, and she's talking about how, oh, but in a not really captive way, but like in a, oh, let me just have a nice little chat with you kind of a way.
She gives her address, and they walk down the hallway. That's like about all that happens.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, she didn't try to marry her. But so the she just gives her exposition, and she just sets up a lot of stuff, and it's like, oh, well, we would have turned you over to the Aegis, the space cops, but we were just gonna wait on doing that for a little bit longer. I don't know if she necessarily was going to do anything bad to Jupiter Jones, or if it was just that she was trying to earn herself into Jupiter Jones' good graces for when she got all of her inheritance, and maybe she'd be nice to her or something. And then maybe she could take advantage of like some favors, like, you know, on this, your special wedding day, I would like, you know, that sort of thing. But, no, nothing happens. And it's not ever revisited. Nothing happens with Kalik. And for some reason, Jupiter is sort of like mortified about Kalik later when she's like, in her little, like space bedroom in the Aegis ship, and she's just like, oh, you know, they're all so mean and terrible. And it's like, Kalik's not great, but like, she didn't like try to kill you. Like, she's got that going for her, and she didn't, you know, her guards, while mostly incompetent, weren't like firing like live rounds at Channing Tatum trying to kill him. There weren't any like dragon people killing anybody.
Yeah, and
or
Channing Tatum's the one
families.
Who broke in anyway, so like that's why they're shooting at each other a little bit. It's not like he did anything, but she just seems generally horrified at the idea. Like, she bathed in the people hot tub or whatever, and now she's young again, and that means she's a terrible person. When in reality, it's just like, if we are to believe that this is like the economy of this sort of space future thing, like, that shouldn't be horrifying to most. I mean, sure, it's horrifying, but like, if that's actually a thing in this world, the reason she's horrified by Kalik is really her deal, not like not Kalik being crazy or creepy.
Yeah, well, and also with Kalik, one of the things that bugged me is when she was introduced, she's wearing old makeup, and so is Eddie Redmayne's character.
She looks terrible. Like, her old people makeup is terrible. Eddie Redmayne's is slightly less bad, but still bad.
Oh, they're both bad, and but hers is especially bad because I think she's supposed to be visually older than Eddie Redmayne is supposed to be, but she doesn't come off that way because she looks like a very young actress who's wearing old people makeup, and it's not good. They tried to age her too far with that makeup. It did not work out well, and so then after you see her like that, then you're just like, okay, so when is she going to be young? Because like, they wouldn't have done that if she wasn't going to be young again. And, of course, you know, she goes in her special hot tub, and they just zap her, and then she comes back out, and there's a lot of nudity. She's totally fine. Babbles on about, you know, your optimum age or whatever.
And even in the middle of her exposition and, like, this horrible thing that she's revealing, she goes, here, feel my skin. Isn't it great? It's like,
yeah.
Apparently she's mentally 20 as well as looking 20 after she comes out of her people tub.
Yeah, I don't know. The other faction that we have here that's playing a major role is the Space Cops, who are very involved in the film, but have no backstory and no characteristics other than sort of archetypical, like, you know, tough nose, like, cop boss kind of characteristics for what's her name? I'm forgetting.
Is she Nikki Yamuka Bird?
Yes, that's her.
Yeah.
She's good at what she's doing in the film, but she doesn't have anything about her, and I would like to actually see more of her because I thought she was sort of interesting in this. Like, what are the power dynamics of this cop force who has to, you know, abide by rules concerning these royals, and like, what does that mean for her and for her crew? And it doesn't mean anything, apparently, because we spend the whole entire movie and we just sort of like see these very rough sketches of like her, you know, police chief characteristics and the elephant pilot and the
who just kind of makes snorty noises or whatever.
Yeah, he goes brrr, when they like go down into Jupiter really fast, and the robot android, you know, person who works for her, and it's just like, okay, so like, they're not of the world, but what world are they of? How does this factor into everything that's going on here? Like, what is, like, they're supposed to be good guys, but why are they good guys? I mean, they might as well have just showed up and it just said cop. And, like, they didn't have any makeup or anything. Like,
that's literally what happened, because Channing Tatum, like, in that longer bit, he just basically says, they're like cops. And, oh, we know what cops are, so that's all the exposition we need about them. They're cops. Which, by the way, where does Channing Tatum know what a cop is? I guess maybe he's just a fan of, you know, the Earth and what we call our people. But, like, that was in the beginning of what was kind of an interesting political discussion, where they were talking about, like, we got to protect her. And then they go, well, there's a blockade because Eddie Redmayne knows what's up. So we can't get off the planet. So I called the Aegis to get an injunction to have her taken to the Hall of Titles. So once that's solidified, then, you know, we can get rid of Eddie Redmayne because, you know, he can't block us anymore because he won't own the place. And that kind of, like, you have to have the police intercede to sort of solve who is actually in the right. That was kind of interesting. But after all of that, she just goes, who's the Aegis? He goes, they're like cops. And he walks out of the room. It's like, ah, come on, man. Like, all right, cool. There goes our Law and Order procedural for the movie. That's like all we're going to get, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we said a couple times, there are interesting stories to tell here. They just weren't told. We got this really boring one.
This really boring one. So let's sum up the entire story briefly. You can be reincarnated. If you are reincarnated as royalty, you get everything that royal person owned in their will. And, if that happens, the other royalty might try to kill you to get your stuff. And that's basically it.
Oh, but don't forget, the reincarnation is just a random genetic act of a series of genes just happening to be like the person who died. So,
yes, on an infinite time scale, everyone will be reincarnated.
Yeah, because they're not literally, there is no active force that reincarnated their mother. She just happened to have the same genetic profile as her, after being born on Earth from totally normal Earth parents who were seeded on the planet millennia ago. So, like, there is nothing about her that is special necessarily, other than the fact that there was
just literally her DNA pattern.
Yes, and that random genetic occurrence is what earns her all of the titles in the will of her mother.
Right, right. So she's born into this sort of like life of servitude. But in the grander scheme of the universe, she is born into all the privilege she could ever want.
Yes. Yes.
So basically what the movie is saying is what you're born into is where you belong. But you may not be born into the thing you think you're born into.
No. Well, but then you got to remember the good things about...
With great power comes great Spider-Man.
But then you got to remember the good things about what you were born into to begin with, and how you should really respect your family and stuff. And the grass is always greener on the other planet. And so, like, okay.
And she owns the planet, mm-hmm. and they buy her the damn telescope. Like, come on, like, take out an equity loan or something, and like, buy yourself your own telescope. What is the matter with you?
Yeah, well, I thought it was weird how they chose to end this film, but. Because she goes through this whole exploration and then realizes that what she really wanted most was her family. But rather than going, oh, hey, we're all fine now, we don't ever have to work again and we'll be great, she goes, I'm going to go back to the same cruddy lifestyle that had a family member of mine steering me towards getting my eggs harvested. like she doesn't change a thing about that.
Well, that's the thing. When she's fighting Eddie Redmayne, he says, the reason I killed you is because you said you hated your life and you wanted to die. And that's what she's supposed to realize there, is that no matter what level of privilege she was born into, people still hate their lives and they want out, where she was before. So what she does is she decides to accept her life, and she's okay with that, and just focus on the family, which I guess is kind of like a heartwarming message or something, but it's completely antithetical to the idea that she literally owns the earth. Like, if it wasn't for the fact that, I mean, she was about to sign the thing or whatever to save her family, and then she realized she was going to be stabbed in the back by Eddie Redmayne, and he was just going to kill and harvest the earth anyway. So she says, nope, not going to do it. I'm going to save the earth, even if you're going to kill me and my family. And literally the only reason she is not immediately killed is because of Channing Tatum. Like, he is the only reason her, like, standing on principle did not completely backfire.
Well, also, I got another question for you. What was to stop him from killing her?
Eddie Redmayne?
Yes.
Not a thing. He was going to, but then Channing Tatum breaks in and battle ensues and he dies.
No, but why go through all of the pretense of, like, getting it signed over?
Oh, because, you know, apparently the bureaucracy is large enough in this organization that they want to have it actually be legally binding on paper that, yeah, yes, they know she was reborn, and they want her stuff legally before they kill her. But if she were to die, wouldn't her mother's will kind of be the thing that says where the stuff goes? And since it already went to Balaam or however you pronounce it, he would just get it back again.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is like, the second that he had her and the Aegis was trapped outside, then just drop her in the atmosphere and be like, oops, she walked out the door. And it's just
maybe it's because that when you kill royalty, there's actually a legitimate investigation. But yeah, if the cops were locked outside and they couldn't actually see what happened in there, they could be like, she fell down some stairs. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't even matter, because it's like they can't investigate. They have no investigative authority because they're stuck outside the atmosphere. And even if they showed up with a bunch of Aegis agents and they, like, make their own, like, whatever Jupiter vortex gas giant thing to, like, get down into the base, and they finally get down in there and they find her dead, what are they going to do? Like, CSI? Like, what would go on then? Like, they're not going to figure out what killed her. Like, it should have been like, you know, oh, well, we just suffocated her or something. Or like, oh, she wasn't feeling well and we gave her this special magic serum or whatever. Like, it doesn't...
No, he would do what they do in the mob. He would get the lizard guy to kill her, and then the lizard guy would go to jail, and he would take care of the lizard guy from outside, because that's what you do. You keep your people happy who sacrifice for the organization.
Yeah, and so it doesn't make any sense. It's just like it just dragged it on unnecessarily. And again, we're clearly led to believe that for some reason these royal people have some sort of entitlement or ability or something, but they're just idiots. And as members of the audience, we're watching a story about these idiots who are terrible at what they do, but are somehow duping the main character every step of the way.
Which is why she seems so much more dumb, because their plans aren't all that well thought out.
No, it really bothers me. And
Here's the thing then. Maybe because this whole time Eddie Redmayne's been trying to kill her, just kill her before she claims her title or whatever. Just kill her in general so I can get my stuff back, because this planet belongs to me. Since all of his efforts to kill her have failed, he's going to go another route and capture the family and use that as blackmail.
That's fine, but I'm saying still kill her when she's there. I mean, the second she was inside the atmosphere of the planet, it's just like, okay, you're going to die now. Like,
the second she was on that ship, Eddie Redmayne should have just pushed a button on his little console on his floating chair there, just blown that ship up. And they'd be like, whoops, there was a leak in the turbine or something.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't even have had to, like, set foot on his little dark little manufacturing plant there.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the whole thing of, like, Channing Tatum's just like, I'm going to go save her. And then he, you know, of course, gets a spaceship, rocket, half robot thing, whatever, without having to, like, you know, sign for it or, like, push a button or anything. It's just like, that's what you can do on military / cop ships, is you could just like peel off in like a giant war vehicle. And so he does that, and he drops into the atmosphere, and the police chief's all like, you know, you're not supposed to do this, this is wrong, blah 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 blah, but go get her. And it's just like, of course she would say that. She would literally say that, because that's the kind of thing you say. And you know, he goes into the atmosphere, and it's just like, oh, this is so tense. And it's like, it's not really tense. Like, he's just bouncing around on a set somewhere, and then we're just cutting back and forth to, like, gas clouds and lightning. And then he smashes...
Yeah, Mila Kunis is basically John Larroquette, and Channing Tatum is in the Winnebago, and Jupiter is Czechoslovakia, and this is basically just Stripes again.
That was a stretch, Dan.
more stuff than this friggin' movie. They break through the border, which is a cloud, instead of a little building manned by some Russian guards.
Yeah, and he crashes through the dome thing, and it's just like, okay, that wasn't a very strong dome. But then he you know, his little thing like skids across.
And then
across.
The whole thing explodes!
Yeah, because the gases from the outside are coming into the plant, and there's the fire, and it's just like feeding the fire because it's all hydrocarbons and everything's going up. And a little rat guy is all like, sir, there's bad stuff happening. We should evacuate. And so they go through the whole thing, and it's just like, this is just so crazy. Like, I don't understand what you guys were like. It's just like, and all of a sudden everything explodes. And then, so the...
Yeah, the other thing, this massive enterprise here in this manufacturing facility is apparently completely unmanned by human beings. So, like, there's a fire, and there's no, like, people goo fire department. Like, they don't just, like, show up and, like, maybe try to put the roof back on or emergency services. Like, it's just... Eddie Redmayne is apparently the only guy running this whole place, and then, like, Ratface guy, and then Dinosaur guy.
Yeah, so they could have fired a missile from the ship, and it would have had exactly the same effect.
Yeah, just punch a hole in the dome, and then like set something on fire, and then literally everything will explode, and that guy will die.
Yes, and what I found more ridiculous than that, though, is that he immediately finds her. It's just like, he was never there in the movie at any point. Like, he has no idea what the lay of the land is. It's not like there were scenes where he was looking at a directory or anything, but he just, like, magically finds her. But, you know, maybe he sniffed her out.
Is capable of pinging people, whatever pinging means.
Uh-huh, whatever. And so he, like, sniffs her out or whatever and goes to the throne room / disassembly area or whatever. To the transparent floor, and there's a little big fighting, and then there's finally the fight with the gargoyle dragon guy. Who, you know, we've seen him since he replaced the previous gargoyle dragon guy, who didn't do anything. And this is finally his chance to do stuff. And it's just like, well, this is kind of a lame fight. And he gets trapped by the little thing around the neck and whatever.
I did think the way he killed him with the portal was pretty cool.
Yeah, but I kind of saw it coming. The second we had, like, the portal thing was still there, I was just like, okay, somebody's going to kind of halfway go through that, and then something's going to happen.
So I didn't necessarily know it was going to be his neck. You watch more space properties than I do, because I didn't realize that's what was going to happen.
Yeah, well, the kind of things tends to happen in space. In space,
you put a portal on the mantle in the first act.
Mm-hmm. You get somebody halfway stuck through it, and they did. And then they Eddie Redmayne is having his whole Oedipus Rex thing going on, and he's all like, mother, I'm gonna kill
everybody.
He
gets very emotional in their back and forth discussion. Like, he's on the verge of tears, and then he's angry and slapping her, and he's crying again, and he's got like quivery voice when he's telling her to sign the thing. He's a very emotional, damaged old man.
I would just like to go on record as saying I think that Eddie Redmayne is quite possibly the worst actor in this film.
I would like to go on record saying Eddie Redmayne is my absolute favorite thing in this movie.
Oh my God, what is wrong with you?
His character is incredible to me. I love it so much.
I don't like him. He's just like, and then I whisper about my evil plan, and then the earth will be mine.
He may be dialed to 11, and he needs to turn it down to 10, but this idea of this just, like, creepy, entitled, like, royal person who just, has this sort of air about them, just this arrogance, and they do whatever they want, and he's got this completely weird affectation, but you can tell he thinks he's better than everyone and he's not afraid of hiding that. Like, I loved his character more than anything else in this movie.
I despised it because I thought it was just like so it was so cliched in a way, like his affectations. I really wanted more from that. Like, I didn't get like the campy scenery chewing stuff. I got like this sort of like whispery voice gravelly thing that
doing. he's like British in the year 3000 or whatever, where he's just like calm and quiet and collected in every situation until he absolutely explodes and then goes nuts. But like, he's got this sort of like nothing flaps him at all, and he's just completely chilled out until he's about to kill somebody, and then he gets really sweaty and loud again.
Yeah, but I don't like it. It really bothered me. And again, just like his siblings, plans that make no sense. And like we said, like, his master plan also doesn't make any sense. And then the best part, though, is the final fight with him and Jupiter, where she finally has like the internal ability to go get that pipe and then beat him up and then, you know, scream that she's not his mother. And I was like, thank God, finally, in this film, it clicked for her. Like, she finally had the moment to do this. And
she's like, I don't have time to deal with your nonsense. I am busy jumping from balcony to balcony that is about to fall off the side of this large wall for some reason.
Yeah. And now, presumably, we imagine that she's trying to get back up to where she was, but she doesn't really necessarily know how to get there. But she's just kind of leaping to safety for the most part because everything's sort of crumbling away. And this is one of those things where I also feel like this goes on for too long, because there are only so many times I can watch her like jump from place to place before I'm just like, aren't we just sort of watching her like going through the same motions over and over
again?
Another
balcony collapse, another balcony collapses, some cables fall off the wall. I don't know about you, but it kind of felt a little like the end of episode 3 to me.
Yeah, I agree. Except the music was not there.
Oh God, can we talk about the music in this movie?
I hate it. And it's Michael Giacchino.
It's so serious and awful.
It was Michael Giacchino. I was so surprised. If anything, this should have like the biggest, campiest, like loud, obnoxious, opulent score. And instead, it has this foreboding, dark, grim, like sad score. And it's just like, this does not go with this movie at all. This colorful, saturated, poppy, campy mess. It's like, this total mismatch in tone.
There are instances in some of the battles where you've got like the loud chorus of the church voices, just the and it's like, okay, this is way too dramatic for this point in the movie, but maybe the drama could be somewhere else. And it's just like,
I think he scored a different film than what was actually
or like he wrote the songs for this film and then just like shook up which scene they should be with and like threw the dice out and go like, we'll put that song with this scene and that song with that scene, and who knows.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very disappointed because I generally do like Michael Giacchino's work. He's done a lot of really good stuff, and he's won a lot of awards, and he's well respected. But this everything that he did here was a total miss for me. I was sort of dumbstruck by it because it's like, how many space operas do you get the chance to do? And it's just like, oh yeah, well, I guess if you're Michael Giacchino, you get to do Star Trek and you get to do Star Wars, and you're probably set for your space operas. But he could have done something genre defying, you know, like not building off of anything else, and instead, I feel like it was just like such a missed opportunity. It was a real disappointment for me.
I would have rather they gone with something cliche like Inception style sound or music or something. I don't know. It didn't work at all.
Yeah,
but that's like the least of the things that didn't work in this movie. Well, it's not the least. It's up there, but
yeah. In the top list of things that didn't work in this movie. But the
it's in the top 10. I'll give the score in the top 10 worst things that did not work in this movie.
Okay, Letterman. So
I like Letterman.
I'm indifferent. So
I'm shocked. I'm literally shocked
that I'm indifferent about something. Yeah. So the you know, have the whole big dramatic thing, and it just keeps going forever and ever and ever. And you're just like, she's eventually going to be safe, and he's eventually going to save her. How much longer is this going to take? And then when the Aegis is finally like, okay, we've given as much time as we can, we're going to jump out of here. And they're all like, oh no, bad things are going to happen. And she's like, we got to do it anyway. And then they start powering it up, and it's like, oh no, how are we going to do it? And it's like, okay, now this is the moment where they're going to be safe. And so, sure enough, he finally scoops her up. But then instead of cutting like to them like barely making it and then getting out of there, they proceed to have a, 2-minute sequence of them like gravity blading through the whole entire industrial complex as it collapses. And it was one of those things where, again, in this film, every single step of the way where they're having any kind of a chase, it's like, why is this 5 times the length this needs to be? Just get to the next story point. This doesn't matter. They're not in any danger. I do not think they're going to die now because it's not that kind of a film. Just go.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I mean, even if we get to this, like, oh, are they going to make it through the portal in time? And of course they make it through the portal and, you know, look out your window. You should open the door or something. Even then, like, okay, so happy ending. They're all safe only because Eddie Redmayne is dead. Like, you know, Titus and Kalik are still alive and around, presumably. So we're just not going to talk about them and the fact that they might come after you at some point. Or are they just so happy that Eddie Redmayne is dead that they get his stuff now that they don't care about the fact that she has Earth? Is that what we're supposed to assume?
I have no idea because we don't revisit any of that. By the end of the film, they don't resolve anything. Like, we never got anything about, you know, them being in trouble for any of the things that they did in the film. We never got anything about Titus, you know, being arrested. Whatever. Doesn't seem to matter. Doesn't seem to bother anyone. Especially since she is on Earth, in her unprotected family home, living in exactly the same spot where everybody knows where she's at. So then it's just like, okay, so is she paying someone to protect the Earth? Like, is that going to be Channing Tatum's job now or something? Like, who is going to be her bodyguard? Because in like 5 seconds, all of a sudden Titus can show up and be like, okay, now I'm going to, you know, kill her for no good reason. Like, he doesn't even have to want anything anymore. He can just be like, you embarrassed me at my wedding. It was my special day. And, you know, it was just like, I don't understand this ending to this film. This does not make a tremendous amount of sense to me.
No, I think it's partly because we're unclear about how the actual hierarchy of the royalty works. Like, we know that, like, the people on Earth are her subjects or whatever. That's what, you know, Titus called them. But, like, does she have an establishment off planet where they sort of monitor what's going on down there? Or is it just sort of like, the people on Earth belong to you? They don't know it, and there's literally no way you could enforce anything on them, but they belong to you. Like, we never saw any instance of how that transfer of power would be used, even if she was so inclined to use it.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't seem to matter. Like, oh, maybe that would have been in the sequel because the movie was so successful. But the movie was not successful, people.
It was very much not.
No, it lost a lot of money for Warner Brothers, which really, can we talk about this for a second? Who was surprised this lost money for Warner Brothers? I want to just throw that out there as just a general question. What movies were they making where they were like, just going up, like all their ideas are gold? Like, what was happening where they're like, let's just keep throwing money at it?
It'll yeah, be and this is another one of those things where it seemed like it's sort of, you know, with the delays in production, I don't think $176 million was probably their target budget. I think a lot of that came after the fact to try and patch some holes or something. But they let it get to $176 million and it pulled in $47 million.
Was that opening weekend?
Opening weekend was 18.
Okay. I just want to point out that Trainwreck, a Judd Apatow movie, made $30 million this last weekend. So
that's almost the entire gross of this movie.
Yes. No, but the well, that's the domestic gross is 47. Worldwide, it was 181 million. So worldwide, they almost made back what it cost to make. Well, they made back a little more than what it cost to make the film, but not the marketing money. No. That's for sure.
Although I don't remember a ton of marketing for this movie. Maybe that was kind of like them trying to cut their losses before the movie even came out because they knew they weren't going to get their marketing budget back.
I saw billboards all over the place, but and movie trailers and stuff on TV. I don't know. Maybe we watched different shows. But
was it on all of the space channels?
No, I didn't watch any space channels. But I'm pretty sure bad word of mouth killed this for most people. Although there's a strong there is popularity among certain women who are nerds on the internet. Like Serenity Caldwell talked about this phenomenon on Unjustly Maligned, and how this is sort of like an inverse of the guy hero, the woman comes in, changes his life, and then they go off and they find out that the guy's really the hero in the end of the film, blah 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 blah, that whole thing. Only and it's good. I would recommend listening to that, especially if you are an actual fan of the film and you think that Dan and I are just jerk faces. you will enjoy her talking with Anthony Johnson about the positive aspects of it and the things they feel work well, the campiness and the cheeseballiness that they find more appealing than Dan and I are finding. I think that is probably a good contrast, but I did not come away from watching this movie feeling the same way. And when I tried to like view it through that lens of like, this is like if they had gender swapped the roles with Channing Tatum being rescued by Mila Kunis and all that stuff, then it still would have been like, why are you such an idiot, Channing Tatum, by the end of the film? Because he would have done nothing. Like usually in those kinds of stories where the guy is rescued by the girl, like if you think about the Lego movie, or if you think about The Matrix, for example, then, done by a sibling duo that you probably never heard of. But the Matrix, like, Carrie Ann Moss, like, busts in and she's such a badass and she's gonna, like, save the day. And then she gets Neo out of there and then Neo comes into his own and discovers who he is. And then he's saving everyone else in the film and then it's the end and he flies off and he's God. And then we reset all that by the end of by the beginning of the next movie. But that stuff is all set up for us in those kinds of movies where the beginning, there's a woman that comes in and rescues the ne'er-do-well man from his lackluster life, and then they, elevate to a certain level. But in this sort of thing, it's like if Mila Kunis had gone on to be like the badass, like possessed, like in charge of herself kind of person by the end of the film, I would have felt a lot better about it. But she's, mm-hmm. like you're saying, like I also agree, like a gullible and naive person through the very end, right up until when she realizes at like 2 seconds before she signs it that, oh, if I do this, then the Earth will be destroyed. It's just like, I don't.
Yeah, those gender roles are only swapped for the first like 20, 30 minutes of the movie. So yeah, she's in the bad place and he comes in and rescues her. But like very shortly thereafter, she's the one going like, thank you for saving me. Oh my God, I love you. And he's the one like, I don't think so. And then at that point, they're back in the role where Channing Tatum is sort of the stronger character, like, Carrie Ann Moss or, Elizabeth Banks or whatever. But yeah, at that point, they're back in sort of the traditional roles where the main character is kind of this weak one and she's the one who's in love rather than the rescuer. And she's the one going like, oh no, please love me or whatever. And he's both strong and the one being admired, which is not, it puts her at a disadvantage in basically all capacities. She's the one pining after the dude and she is not a powerful character on her own.
Yeah, but she loves dogs. I groaned so hard when that happened. I groaned
Plus he heard
so
that
hard.
Because he's got dog hearing and he was only in the hallway.
Yeah. But I I don't think that this movie is necessarily like an $18 million opening weekend bad. I think it's just like, I think it's a mess. And I think people should, I think it's something that is sort of fascinating to watch if you want to see like some interesting takes on, you know, space designs and costuming things and not facial hair. But, and not old age makeup. But the, in terms of like, and like a couple of like interesting ideas about maybe some world building concepts that could have been interesting. But the film as a whole, I don't think holds together, and I wouldn't give it an award for anything. And I wouldn't hold it up as like a shining example of science fiction done well. And I wouldn't say that it's a campy, tongue in cheek movie that understands its own pitfalls, because it doesn't.
The jokes are just awful. Like, you know, the how did I get in my clothes? Like, well, I put them on. Like, yeah. And then the callback later where she's like, can I change into something by myself while I'm awake? And he's just like, what? It's like, well, that's potentially a. Would you rather he take you to the spaceship in a hospital gown?
Well, she says that like two or three times in the film, too. Like, makes a reference to that. Yeah. And not always when Channing Tatum is in the room. And it's just like, oh, goodness. I don't know. I think like this movie could have been made either with a different story, or this movie could have been made with the same story, but like with a cheaper budget and an eye towards tighter editing. But it still wouldn't have necessarily been an amazing masterpiece, because I just think there's just a lot going on. And I think we both agree with the antagonist and the protagonist, like popping up and disappearing and being gullible, et cetera, that it doesn't really like appeal on like a character level either, where we're not like, oh, well, this character was so fascinating, except of course, for some reason you love Eddie Redmayne. Dan Hart's Eddie Redmayne. I think they call it shipping. That's like when they say that about the characters on the show. So you wouldn't be shipping because you weren't in the movie. Man, what if you were in the movie? Then that would have been a thing. But too bad.
The hell are you talking about?
I'll look it up later. So
one of the reasons I'm realizing this movie feels a little weird is like we've seen movies like this before. And I don't know why the one that comes to mind is Die Hard 4, the one with Justin Long, where Channing Tatum actually could have been the main character, where like, you know, he's tasked with a mission and he goes to find this person who's essentially like, get away from me. What's wrong with you? You're a weirdo. Get away from me. And then he's like, people are after you. I need to protect you. And she keeps saying, no, get away from me. I don't believe you. And then boom, they're in attack. He rescues her. She goes, okay, fine. I believe you. Maybe I'll stick by your side for a little while we figure out what's going on. And then Channing Tatum has to basically solve what's going on and kill the bad guys, which is what he does in this movie. He's just not the main character. And I don't know. It would have been a different movie, but at the same time, it's the same movie if Channing Tatum were actually the main character and he had, you know, Mila Kunis was his mission. But of course, you know, the romance gets involved as it always does eventually. But I wonder if it would have been a more successful movie if they would have framed it differently, with him being our intro and how we get into the whole situation.
I don't think I necessarily would have found that to be more appealing, because I think what I really wanted to have happen is for her to take charge of her own destiny. And I think I still would have found that lacking if we had shifted the emphasis to him rescuing her more.
So imagine he's, you know, disbanded military guy. He wants to get his wings back or whatever it is. And, you know, rich guy shows up and says like, I'll give you your stuff back and you can be a soldier again if you do this thing for me. And he doesn't even think twice about it. He goes down there and he goes, lady, you're coming with me. And she goes, I don't know what your deal is. Get the hell away from me. And she can potentially be a strong character in the sense that she's not a damsel in distress or that kind of thing. But he's like, look, you know, this is a bigger world. I know you don't believe me, but I'm just going to keep following you around until you finally believe me. And then, of course, they attack and she goes, okay, maybe I believe you. Let's figure this out. But I don't know. I kind of feel like it could have been positioned differently that way. I don't know if it would be a better movie, but that would be more like something I know I've seen before that was a more successful movie than this one. Yes, I'm saying Die Hard 4 was more successful than this one, which is a weird thing to say.
Okay, I'll take your word for it because I haven't seen Die Hard 4. But the I think that wraps it about up, except I did think of a joke that I want to tell you.
Well, before you tell me your joke, don't forget it. Write it down or something. I did want to say, like, in that scene where he rescues her from the clinic and they're up in undisclosed skyscraper talking about the fact that, like, humans, you're not the only race in the entire universe. You're so self-centered, blah, blah, blah. There's a line there where she goes, "What if I say no? What if I don't go with you and I just go home?" And up until that point, Channing Tatum has not said anything about taking her anywhere. He has just showed up to protect her. And this is one of the things where something is very clearly missing from that scene. And I was trying to figure out what, and I still can't figure out what exactly was removed from this movie, except maybe just condensing a few lines to make it shorter. But I feel like there was a larger piece of this movie that is missing. Do you have any idea what it might be?
No clue. I'm sure that with the number of reshoots they supposedly did, it could be lots of things, or at least rearranged.
All I know is she says, "What if I don't go with you and I go home?" And I thought to myself, he has literally not said at any point in this movie, you should come with me.
Okay.
Felt a bit out of place, but go ahead. Tell me your joke.
I was just going to say, you know, there was an actor playing somebody who was spliced with a honeybee in this film. Do you know what his name is, Dan?
Sean Bean.
No, Sean Bean.
You think they cast him specifically because of that?
Yes, I'm absolutely positive.
His bee-like personality?
Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, that was the dumb joke. There was a lot of build-up for that.
They should have taken it a little bit further, and once he stabbed or stung Channing Tatum in the back, he should have died. You know, that's what happens to bees when they sting people.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of criticism about the bees in this film. A lot of people frequently make fun of it. Like, I think the first, like, 30 seconds of the Flophouse, they poke fun at it as well. And
bees are genetically designed to recognize royalty. So she's flapping her arms around and the bees are moving like she's conducting an orchestra because she's royalty and the bees can sense it. For what purpose at all?
For like ID checks or something? I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense, because if she's randomly genetically assembled like from people on Earth, then are there people on Earth who get like false positives or something? Like, I don't know how that works, but
you've never been stung by a bee, right? No, but I don't think that's completely uncommon. No, that's because you're royalty.
Yes, I know.
Right then? Sure.
Yeah. Well, and then the
what Sean Bean is part bee too. Like, why didn't he like smell the royalty in the air or whatever?
That's a little personal, Dan. But the I don't know. I don't know necessarily why that was. Because it seems like that would be part of the reason you would splice him with a bee then. But I don't really get it. I think it was one of those things that they wanted to have like sort of like a fairy tale moment of something otherworldly about the bees. And it, you know, fine.
Another great place for a music cue that feels way overdone.
Yeah, very overdone. But I did like when she is trying to escape the bounty hunters who found them at the place, that the bees start stinging all the people who are chasing her, which turns out to be just that one guy. But I thought that was a nice touch, because then it sort of like made a little bit of sense. Like, what if you had like just omnipresent bodyguards everywhere? But they're not really like omnipresent. He just happens to live in a house that's covered in beehives. But it's not really something they do anything else with in the rest of the film, but it sort of sticks out in everyone's mind when you're talking about the film, because it's just like, that was so wacky. Like, why did we set that fact up? And then Sean Bean has to deliver it like in such an earnest way, like to say this completely seriously to her and call her, you know, Your Majesty while he's doing it. And it's just like, Sean Bean, you deserve that paycheck that you got for this, because I could not have said that with just like cracking up every time I said it on every take. I wonder if there are like just like moments on the cutting room floor where he couldn't do it, or if it was just like every single time it was like first take, because he's such a pro. Like, what do you think it is? Do you think he was just like cracking up?
No, I think he probably said it just fine, and then he went back to his trailer and just drank a fifth of rye or something. Just like, God damn it, what am I doing here?
I used to be Boromir, but so the.
At least nobody killed him.
Yeah. I kept waiting for that shoe to drop. That would be the one surprise of this film, is that Sean Bean didn't die by the end of it.
At least he was not beheaded.
That would be terrible. look at us. We're just great.
I don't know that I have anything else here.
No, I don't have anything else here either. Let's wrap up this.
We can make fun of how when the assassins take her to Kalik, like they trade her for some vials of people goo, and the one does the same thing that they do with like cocaine in movies, where she like sticks a knife in and like licks it and goes, "It's good stuff." Like, are you supposed to drink it or just bathe in it? Like, we're not entirely sure how the mechanics of the people goo work.
I don't know. Maybe she has a really young tongue now. Wouldn't that be weird? It's like all the wrinkles go away.
Her taste buds are very youthful again.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's great for the GI tract. It's probiotics. It's space Activia.
Oh, regulate your digestive system by drinking human goo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that essentially cannibalism, by the way?
Oh, I'm sure, technically. But, I mean, it's, like, distilled, so... You know.